The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast joins you once again. Matt Velasquez, Journal Sentinel beat reporter covering the Bucks, is on the other line. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the podcast, and the Milwaukee Bucks are once again playing great basketball. No surprise, they've won three games since we last chatted, all three contests in fairly convincing fashion. Most notably, on Tuesday night, they beat the Houston Rockets 108-94 in a battle between basically the two MVP frontrunners in Giannis Antetokounmpo and James Harden. The Bucks have swept the Rockets this year. Their magic number to clinch the top seed in the Eastern Conference, the overall top seed in the NBA, actually, for the playoffs, is down to three. Matt Velasquez, the Bucks rolling. Last time we talked, I guess it was still possible that the Bucks would fall out of that number two spot, but now it's looking like this is it. The Bucks have got this locked up. What has been your impression, just for starters, over these last three games as they've put the clamps down on the Heat, the Cavaliers, and the Rockets?
Yeah, I mean, we last checked in on the Bucks when they were in a kind of a situation of their highest adversity this season. You know, guys were falling like flies, and they still kind of are in terms of getting injured. They had lost to the Cavs. I think they'd lost two out of three. It was a situation where you didn't know what was going to come next. And what came next was the Bucks putting together a really solid run of three games to start this homestand, playing, you know, a really, really good team basketball. Sterling Brown working his way back into the rotation. Eric Bledsoe showing out against the Rockets. Giannis doing Giannis stuff. And here we are. The Bucks have rattled off these three straight wins and are all but certain to lock up that number one seed in the East relatively quickly, and still very much have an opportunity to reach 60 wins this year, something that's looking more and more possible by the day.
Yeah, also George Hill is back. You're talking about the injuries. George Hill is back and on the floor, and he was contributing to the defensive effort on James Harden on Tuesday night. Let's linger on the injuries just a little bit more. If there's any information updates about Nikola Mirotic, or if the timeline has changed with Malcolm Brogdon at all, I don't think there's anything new. But then also talking a little bit about Dante DiVincenzo, who's now officially out for the rest of the year. The issue with his heel never quite healed, and now it looks like the Bucks will be without him for the rest of the season. I know they've been working without him for a long period of time, but what does that do to the Bucks' depth situation, knowing that they're not going to have him back?
Starting with DiVincenzo, he's been basically out since January, since the start of January. He missed some games here and there in December, but January was when they really shut him down. He missed 2 months with that bilateral heel bursitis in his right foot. He had a walking boot on. They kept him, you know, rested and away from the court, trying to really slow him down and give that heel a chance to heal. And so he had four games where he came back, looked generally pretty good, seemed healthy, was playing fine. But then the pain returned. They had to sit him out again, and it just became a situation where you know, rest was going to be best, and they had to make that tough decision. He's going to have a biologic injection at Frederick Medical College of Wisconsin. His recovery time is going to be the rest of the season, regardless of how far they go. He's out, and the expectation is that he'll make a full recovery by next season. But, you know, he had to give it time. They're invested in his future, and they don't want to have this be something that is going to last for the rest of his career, or is going to keep following along. They want to nip this problem in the bud and try and find a way to get him healthy so he can be part of the team on a more consistent basis for next year. And so he had, you know, some flashes and was a promising rotation player, and the hope is he can get back to that. The rest of the injuries, I think Malcolm Brogdon's still kind of around the second round is when they're hoping to get him back. I saw him yesterday. He's no longer on two crutches. He's on kind of like a cane or like one crutch and a walking boot. So I guess that's progress. Nikola Mirotic, at least according to Mike Budenholzer, the expectation is that he'll be back before the playoffs, which is faster than other reports might have indicated. And then Tony Snell on Sunday against the Cavaliers, he went down, rolled his left ankle pretty badly. Was able to come back in, play a few more minutes But then went to the locker room, got checked out, didn't return for the rest of the game. And then later that day in the locker room, you know, we were in there with the team waiting to interview some people, and we saw Tony Snell, and you know that his shoes were off and his left ankle was really swollen, like noticeably swollen, with that sprain. And then when it was time to go take a shower, you know, he sat down in his like rolly office locker chair that he has, and he rolled his way into the shower instead of walking. And then when he came out, you know, he was holding on to the back of the chair, using it to brace himself as he walked back to his locker. So it didn't look very good. But then I asked Mike Budenholzer on Tuesday night, you know, if he expected Tony to miss a long period of time or extended period of time. He's like, well, that kind of depends on your definition of an extended period of time. And so I followed up. I was like, well, will he be back like by playoff time? And he was like, yes. So, you know, when you're at this point in the season where the magic number is 3 and 7 games left, and you have, you know, guard depth, you know, with Sterling Brown, Pat Connaughton, George Hill, you know, all guys who have performed well over the past few games and, you know, are more than capable of handling those minutes down the stretch. You can definitely give players like Tony Snell the time that they need to recover before you hit playoff time. And additionally, Pau Gasol should be out somewhere around a month, which would put him coming back maybe during the first round or second round of the playoffs.
And the injuries just biting away at the fringes of this roster. And obviously Giannis is, you know, at times resting his ankle, but like every big depth piece seems to have experienced an injury at this point. And I promise we're going to talk about Harden and the MVP race and some of the other things that happened. But real quickly to go back to Brogdon, kind of touched on this last podcast when we talked about his injury, but he is, you know, one of the big decisions that the Bucks have to make in the offseason if they want to bring him back and if he fits into their long-term, their financial picture more than I'm sure he would fit into any long-term picture, you know, in a vacuum. But I'm curious what you think this injury means to that situation. If it's the type of thing that has no impact whatsoever, if he comes back and is playing in full, or if it does sort of give either the Bucks pause about what they might be willing to do with him, or it changes his perspective on sort of exploring free agency. What is there anything you can read yet about how this injury might impact that situation?
You know, I think it's too soon to necessarily tell. When you're dealing with foot injuries like that, it could affect his value on the market this summer for free agency. As a restricted free agent, you know, the Bucks will have the ability to try and match and any offer he gets and bring him back, which if you're another team and you were trying to, you know, find a way to kind of take Brogdon away or make the Bucks pay a high dollar figure, maybe this gives you some pause. You know, he was, you know, 50-40-90 this season, you know, an absolute, like, you know, gem in the role that he had, where he could run the point, he could play off ball. He wasn't necessarily relied upon to be the main scorer or even one of the main scorers, but, you know, when the chips were down, he could drive, he could shoot, you know, those open threes that were created for him by other guys in the offense. You know, they don't really run plays for him, but he just kind of made the most of all the opportunities that he got, whether he created them or someone else created the space around him. And so being in that role, he's just been great. And maybe for the other team who was looking at all that saying, hey, he could do that for our team, maybe you'd say, well, you know, with a plantar fascia tear and that type of injury, like maybe that's something that could be nagging, maybe that's something that can continue throughout his career or be a problem in the future. I don't know if we want to, like, you know, have the Bucks call our bluff and say, all right, you know what, if you want to pay him that huge number, then, you know, we're not going to match it and we'll let him go. And so it's kind of a dicey situation. But I think overall, like, his value will be demonstrated in the playoffs when he's able to come back and how he's able to, you know, reintegrate back into the team and what kind of production he'll be able to have, because there might be a lot of season left for the Milwaukee Bucks. You know, if he gets back in the second round or even during the second round and they're able to keep on going, I mean, there's a bunch of games that he'll be back for and be able to contribute in and be able to demonstrate the type of value that he can provide. But as of you know, prior to that injury, I think a lot of the conversation, you know, about the Bucks and from the Bucks has been that their interest and their intent to try and keep this core together. And so I don't know that this would change that, especially considering that they're going to have the most knowledge about Brogdon and his injury and all of that. But it definitely, you know, has the potential to affect his market.
All right, let's go to that Tuesday night game. James Harden and the Houston Rockets against the Bucks. The Milwaukee Bucks Twitter game was just on fire on Tuesday night after the Bucks had defeated Houston. You saw a Checks Over Stripes post, which is a hip-hop reference. Drake, that's a Nike Adidas reference. Very clever, as with a brief video of Giannis after Nike repped Giannis, defeated Adidas repped James Harden. And then a picture of PJ Tucker, a Rockets player who walked into the venue with a getup, including a sweatshirt that said, "I'm with the MVP," and an arrow pointing to James Harden walking in beside him. They cleverly put a photo together, putting PJ Tucker next to Giannis, a previous photo of Giannis. Just phenomenal. Sound the petty horn. That's amazing.
Petty. 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 Petty.
The petty. Important part is that the Bucks won and the head-to-head battle. We saw an advertisement, a full-page advertisement from Adidas on basically behalf of James Harden selling his MVP case in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, which was super weird, I thought. Very strange tone, very conciliatory, very conversational. Like, it's okay if you think something else, but you know, here's what we think about James Harden. It was strange. I think all of this indicates that the Bucks star is going to win the MVP, that he has moved ahead of James Harden. But I still think that there are a lot of national perspectives that favor Harden, that see the points, that see the crazy scoring streak he's gone on, and that they still see him as the MVP. And some people have even said the slam dunk MVP, the clear choice. It's not a clear choice. It's pretty much a 1-2. It's a two-horse race. It's going to come down, I think, to the wire. But when you see the Bucks sweep the Rockets, do you think that is a feather in Giannis's cap, or is that just not going to be a factor when it gets down to the statistical comparison at the end of the year?
I mean, I think it helps in the case of if you're trying to make the case for Giannis. But I think if also at the same time, if you're trying to make the case for Harden, you just ignore that. And you don't really need to worry about that. You know, the first game, they didn't have Chris Paul in Houston, a game that maybe if Chris Paul plays, the Rockets win that one. And then, you know, the game in Milwaukee obviously was a, you know, it turned into a one-sided affair, but you can say, well, you know, James Harden, you know, didn't have a super efficient night, but he almost had a triple-double, and Giannis wasn't like, you know, totally incredible and unstoppable. I mean, 19 points, 15 rebounds. It was a really good game. You know, he played, or 19 points, 14 rebounds, maybe. I forget if it was 14 or 15. He was 7 of 15 from the field. But it wasn't like he was, you know, a showstopper. That kind of belonged to Eric Bledsoe. But, you know, you can kind of make your arguments around it. But I think, you know, there are strong arguments for both sides when it comes to, you know, what Harden's done and how much he's had to carry that Rockets team, especially when they were just like absolutely like destroyed by injuries to their starting lineup and their rotation. And they really could have fallen out of the playoff picture, you know, once and for all during the middle of the season. And James Harden, by necessity, you know, became that guy who took over. I mean, if you had the Motley crew around him, you know, I don't think you'd be passing to them either. I think you try and score as much as you can, because that's your best option. That's how you win games, is by getting the ball to your best option on any given play to shoot the best quality shot. And his shots, whether they were at the free throw line or step back threes or floaters or whatever it was, those generally, you know, I would say reflected the best opportunity for the Rockets to score when he didn't have, you know, guys like Paul and Capella around him, you know, among others. So, you know, I think that it's going to go down to the wire. I polled a group of 25 writers the other day, just asking what they thought about the MVP race. These are all people who voted in last year's for last year's NBA awards, and who, you know, potentially could be voting for them again. And they currently cover the NBA, so this is a pretty representative group of people who, you know, who could be in that voting block. And out of those 25 votes, 13 went to Giannis, 10 went to James Harden, and two people were totally flummoxed by the idea of having to decide on an MVP right now, which I understand. And so it's going to come down to a really close vote. I know one person, even, you know, while they leaned Giannis for the moment, they said, I really wish that they could just split it, because it's that close in his mind, and it's that close, that's close in the minds of a lot of people. And with 75 more people out there, potentially to try and cast their vote. I mean, this could go really either way, or even actually split, because I don't think that anybody's going to have Giannis or Harden below the two spot on their MVP ballot. I mean, you have to name five. And when you rank them, like, I just can't see an argument for putting anyone above either of those two guys. So it's not like that the vote is going to be kind of murky, where you get some first place votes, but then you're on fifth place in ballots, or, you know, whatever. I think it's going to be just come down to who gets more first place votes, because everybody, the other guy is going to get all the second place votes in that situation. So I think it'll be fun. And when it comes to the Bucks social media and the petty horn and all that stuff, like, I've got to believe that MVP picture that has circulated very far, it's got to be photoshopped. Like, I don't see any reason why Giannis would be walking where PJ Tucker's walking pregame. The Bucks players come in a different entrance, like by their family room. They don't walk in by that, like, kind of like loading dock area, like the opposing team does. I don't think Giannis was wearing that exact outfit yesterday. He was wearing a different color hoodie. At least after the game, and usually he's pretty consistent with wearing something in, wearing something out. It's still a pretty strong move by the Bucks social media crew to think ahead with PJ Tucker walking in by himself. At least it looks like it would be by himself based on the picture, and leaving enough room for to Photoshop Giannis in next to him. It's very, very petty, very fun, very much getting the clicks, getting the retweets, all that stuff. I'm sure PJ Tucker's not thrilled about it, nor should he be. But that's the kind of stuff that makes the NBA fun.
This is a very skilled Photoshop job. It is not clear when you look at it that it is a Photoshop. It has to be. It is. It's just great work, Milwaukee Bucks social media, and your editing skills are very good. Congratulations.
Well, and looking at it on Instagram instead of on Twitter, like, it looks like you can see Giannis's feet, and that seems like the giveaway that it's a photo. Like, the feet don't seem totally right in terms of, like, the way they land on the ground and the way he's walking. That's got to be hard. It looks kind of like he's floating, and maybe I'm just the one who sees it that way. It's really hard to get someone from a different picture to then Photoshop them in and have them, like, adequately look like they're walking or they fit in. That might just be me, but I kind of look at it and think, like, hey, it looks like he's floating a little
bit. Yeah, you're totally right. And let's be honest, Giannis is on another level. It's possible that he is levitating, but the key to that tweet is to cover up these feet, because I'm looking at it at Instagram right now, and I think that left shoe is sort of your giveaway. Oh yeah, it is a Photoshop, but we know it is. It's just really good work. Great job, Bucks social media team. Real quickly on this advertisement that was in the Journal Sentinel. Like I said, it was taken out by Adidas. Shout out to Adidas for supporting local journalism. Had a couple people saying, why would the paper even run that ad? And I'm like, people, first of all, that's a lot of money. A full page ad, if you aren't a company, you probably can't afford a full page ad. And there are some stipulations about political speech and hate speech and things that would preclude someone from running an ad. This is not even a negative ad. He doesn't mention Giannis. It's very much like, you know, people say bad things about my game. Here's what I say to that. You know, that sort of thing. It was a very interesting conversational thing, clearly timed to run on the day that the Bucks and the Rockets were going to meet in Milwaukee. I just don't know who he's appealing to, because there, you're talking about the voting process. There are 100 media members who vote for the MVP. You have voted for the MVP in the past. It's not it's not like he's got a huge platform of potential MVP voters who are going to read this ad in the print paper of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. So it just struck me as an interesting decision. But again, shout out to Adidas. Hey, we are happy to take the advertising revenue. It was just a very interesting story on a Tuesday morning.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw the ad, I didn't know that it was going to be there until like you brought it to my attention, like the morning of the game. Like, it wasn't like anybody told me, hey, like we're going to run this ad or the paper's doing this. No, it just happened. I saw it, and it's okay, cool. Like Adidas's money is green too, and we like money. Like that we are a for-profit enterprise aimed at providing excellent local journalism throughout Milwaukee and Wisconsin, not just in sports but everything else. So that's a good thing to have, you know, companies that are willing to take out ads. And I posted on Twitter that if anyone else, any company, entity, person wants to take out full page ads to support their favorite NBA player for whatever reason, like please do it. Let me know. I will set you up with the right people. We are all for that. You could also do them to support Giannis if you so choose. There are a lot of things we can do here when it comes to advertising for those who are interested. But yeah, you're right. The ad itself, like it's fine. Like it's whatever. Like okay, like they even admit like, hey, you might not even read this. Like okay. He's free to harden. That's his prerogative. He can do whatever he wants. He is an adult human being who has, you know, the full rights to choose his own basketball playing style and life choices and all that. And that's great. I'm glad that has been brought to my attention. And I'm glad that it was brought to my attention through our newspaper.
Free to Harden, not my favorite expression, but hey, I got nothing against the guy. He is fun to watch. He is fun to watch. He's a great basketball player. If he wins MVP this year, I don't think that's wrong. I don't think that would be an incorrect choice. I happen to think Giannis is the better candidate at the moment, but Harden certainly is going to make this interesting down the stretch. You can find, if you don't know what we're talking about, you got to check out the story at jsonline.com about the James Harden advertisement. And obviously you can catch Matt Velasquez's recap from the game last night, Tuesday night. I say last night, this is going to post on Thursday, so forgive me for the timing weirdness. You can also check out my magic number update at jsonline.com. Update that daily. And included in that is how the playoffs would shake out if the season started today. It has been Miami as the eighth seed for a while, scheduled to face the Bucks, the top seed in the first round of the Eastern Conference playoffs, but things have shifted a little bit. Tuesday night, the Orlando Magic beat Miami head-to-head. Those two teams battling for that eighth spot. Charlotte can't be counted out, especially when Jeremy Lamb is hitting half quarters to win games against Toronto. But Orlando and Miami right now are the top two teams vying for that spot. With the win, Orlando leapfrogged Miami on Tuesday night. So right now, as we're talking, the Bucks would face the Magic in the first round of the playoffs. There's a lot to be decided yet. Charlotte, again, can't be counted out. We've talked about some of these teams a little bit. Which matchup would give you the most pause? Orlando's playing well. They've won six in a row. Charlotte has got Kemba Walker, probably the best player of that any of these three teams has. Miami, the Bucks have sort of steamrolled the last couple times, but they did win earlier in the year. And we've talked about how Miami probably isn't going to, probably none of these teams are going to truly stack up against the Bucks in the first round. And it should be an easy win for Milwaukee. We say should be with a, you know, with a knock on wood. But which of these three teams would concern you if the Bucks did wind up drawing them in the first round of the Eastern Conference playoffs?
I would say the Magic, only because they're really hot right now. They've won six in a row. They just knocked off the Sixers in a convincing fashion. They seem to have gotten new life with the addition of one Michael Carter-Williams, former Bucks great? No, not so much. But former Buck, you know, it's funny, I digress. Back, I used to work at MLB.com, and there was somebody there who referred to every player who used to play for a previous team as a former whatever great. Like every single player was a former whatever great.
Well, the Bucks have a few of them then, because Christian Wood with the Pelicans had a big night Tuesday. Former Bucks great Christian Wood delivering for New Orleans, by the way.
Yeah, no, he has been waiting his turn. But yeah, so I kind of have that little chuckle in my head whenever I think of a former a player against his former team, just thinking of them as a former whatever great, like, oh, like Michael Carter-Williams, former Bucks great. Like, you know, cuz they're all great in some way. That was what the guy always would explain. He's like, "Oh, cuz they were all great in some way."
He was a great idea when they traded for him. I was all for that trade. I thought it was a great idea. It did not work.
It did not go the way that they had hoped. But he is reunited with John Hammond in Orlando. That Magic team is playing really well. They've gone from basically out of the playoffs, and the Heat had a pretty good stranglehold on that last seed until the Magic have gotten hot and even beat the Heat on Chris Bosh night, his jersey retirement night on Tuesday. And so if we're talking about a team that I think the Bucks maybe should be, you know, worried about or avoid, again, this is all like predicated on the idea that I don't think the Bucks will be pushed that hard in the first round. I don't think that, you know, I think going to six games is the furthest I could see that series going, regardless of who it's against. And even that would be like pretty surprising. So I think that Orlando would give them, you know, maybe the toughest test right now, because you just don't want to play the team that's going into the playoffs, like, you know, firing on all cylinders and feeling really confident and good about themselves. You'd rather play a team that has backed their way into the playoffs, has a lot of questions, isn't really that confident, hasn't been putting the wins together, you know, where, you know, maybe that team could be the Brooklyn Nets or the Detroit Pistons. The Nets, it looked like they were going to be the sixth seed for the longest time. And now they're only a game ahead of the Magic. The Pistons are only a half game ahead of the Magic. You know, the Bucks are 6-0 against the Nets and Pistons this year, including sweeping the Pistons, and they have two games yet against the Brooklyn Nets. So it might be better for them to match up against one of those teams, just because they have proven they can beat them. I mean, the Nets will be feisty in the playoffs. I think they'll pull it together. They have enough young talent to make things interesting, but they also just don't have enough talent wise to make that happen. And I think the fun thing too is that, you know, outside of Charlotte, really, all the other four teams that are in the playoff picture, sorry, Washington Wizards, have some type of interesting like hook with the Bucks. You know, with Brooklyn, you'd get Mike Budenholzer against Kenny Atkinson, you know, his former assistant coach. You also get Jared Dudley in there, and he's always fun. Former Bucks great, Jared Dudley. You know,
he is a former Bucks great. I loved him. I still love him.
I mean, I can't think of a Bucks fan who didn't like him, right, or love him. The Detroit Pistons, obviously, that's a team that the Bucks traded Thon Maker to, getting Stanley Johnson, then turning him into Nikola Mirotic. So there'd be that nice little story there, you know, former Bucks great Thon Maker. And then, you know, the Miami Heat, well, for the purposes of Milwaukee, you know, you might,
Dwayne Wade, maybe.
You'll get two more chances, maybe three, to see Dwayne Wade, and maybe his last dance would end, you know, either against Milwaukee or in Milwaukee, or he would defy Father Time and all kinds of expectations and lead the Heat to the second round, something I don't expect. But, you know, those are the options off the table. And so I think there's a lot of fun things to write about. And, oh, of course, Orlando Magic, like I said, like John Hammond, MCW, like, you know, the guy who drafted Giannis and started this rebuild, and John Hammond plus MCW, who is still a very close, you know, friend of Giannis's. You know, they were really tight in here with the Bucks together. A lot of storylines, a lot of fun. But I think that all of that would be kind of glazed over in the full season picture, because everyone will want to focus on the great regular season and then the second round, where the Bucks will undoubtedly get a much more interesting matchup, which at the current moment would be either the Indiana Pacers or the Boston Celtics.
Yeah, and those two teams are battling for that fourth spot. The Celtics can't seem to stay on a roll and catch Indiana, but that's an interesting battle as well. You talked about the bottom half. There's a lot of jockeying that's going to go around. By the way, how dare you discount Frank Kaminsky's Hornets as being an interesting storyline coming to Milwaukee? The rejuvenated Frank Kaminsky, former Badgers great, legitimate great, That would also be a little bit interesting to Milwaukee fans. By the way, just over my shoulder, I can see the Bradley Center getting deconstructed here in the Journal Sentinel newsroom, and I can see the an exposed escalator. It still makes me think of Dwayne Wade anytime I look at that building. Just the great memories, the moments that he had there as a Marquette Golden Eagle, but then obviously also with the Heat when they checked in and took on the Bucks. Well, one last thought here before I let you go. Jason Kidd is back in the news a bit this week. He was on The Jump on ESPN on Tuesday, chatting about sort of where he's at. A lot of chatter that he could be the next coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. Lakers would have to part with Luke Walton for that to happen. It's not clear that it will, but Jason Kidd maybe in the mix there. I'm curious if that surprises you, because I mean, I don't want to disparage Jason Kidd entirely. I think people are really, really down on him, and they don't need to be, but it is noticeable that this team went from a 7th seed last year with many of the same core players to the best team in the NBA overnight, essentially with Coach Mike Budenholzer. It's hard not to view that as a condemnation of Jason Kidd. And I just would be surprised to see him back in coaching so quickly. What is your reaction to the Kidd chatter around the Los Angeles Lakers?
If I say former Bucks great Jason Kidd, I think
you have overstepped your bounds.
Yeah, I think the Journal Sentinel building would be demolished right next to the Bradley Center.
That's so true.
Petty.
I'm not going to go there.
Petty.
But I'm not totally surprised that he's in conversations as a potential coaching candidate for the Lakers. I think that's been, you know, his name's been thrown about for a while now. So I guess any surprise that I have has had time to settle in and kind of dissipate. I just don't know how much of a fit that would be. Maybe he's picked up some new tricks or learned some new things from his year out of coaching. Things that he can use to, you know, in a new job. I think he's still definitely interested in coaching, and that's been clear. I think since he was removed from the Bucks job, that he does want to coach. He doesn't want to still be involved in the game, and he thinks he has something to give. And you know, I guess rightfully so. I mean, he's a Hall of Fame player. He didn't do nothing with the Bucks. He didn't impede all growth with the Bucks. Like he helped them grow from the, you know, a 15 win team to a team that was consistently, you know, making the playoffs. They made it 3 out of 4 years. Helped Giannis develop and mold him into a more potent threat. You know, so he wasn't without positives. I wouldn't say that. But you know, by the end of his tenure, the Bucks defense had been figured out and hadn't, you know, didn't never changed. They were just super aggressive and weren't able to stop teams that knew exactly how to tear them up and, you know, get a high volume of corner threes and shots at the rim, which is the exact opposite of what they've been doing this year. They've been taking away corner threes. They've been taking away the rim, and it helps to have someone like Brook Lopez, who has really excelled on both ends of the court this year in the role that he has. Maybe it, you know, if Jason Kidd had Brook Lopez or Ersan Ilyasova or both of those guys, if he had the same roster, I think the Bucks would be better just by default. But I don't know if they. I don't know. I'm quite certain they wouldn't be this good because we had a long enough time to see Jason Kidd and the strategies that he had, and he didn't rely on the 3-pointer as a floor spacing option the way that Mike Budenholzer has. He didn't value that shot. He kind of had the mentality of just owning the paint, getting to the rim, and maybe shooting some threes here and there. And Budenholzer has told his guys, hey, let it fly. And that's going to open up the paint. That's going to force teams to make the decision of, do we want to give up threes or do we want to give up shots to the rim? Do we want to stop Giannis and Bledsoe and Brogdon on their drives? Or do we want to cut off the kickouts and just trust our defenders one-on-one against those, you know, high level scorers and elite, like, you know, guys attacking the rim. And so, you know, Jason Kidd didn't do that. He didn't believe in kind of the cult of 3-point shooting. He wasn't challenging defenses in that same way. He was okay with Chris Middleton living in the mid range, and you know, he was really elite in the mid range last season. But just by virtue of moving back, Middleton's three-point shooting and the threat of that, gives the defense a different look and forces them to step out to him and just clears out that little bit more space for other guys to drive, which, you know, has made a huge difference. The Bucks are still an exceptional team at scoring in the paint and scoring inside while shooting a high number of three-pointers. And I know in one of the interviews this week, I think it was on The Jump, he said, well, maybe if I could do something differently, I'd embrace the three more, have guys shoot more, do some other stuff. And I think he said all the right things when it came to talking about the Bucks, saying, oh, he's happy to see them developing and growing and getting to a point where people thought they could get to and all that type of stuff. So I don't know if he is the right answer for the Lakers. My experience with, you know, him being the coach of the Bucks would tell me that maybe that won't work, but maybe he's changed some of his philosophies. And, I think one of the more important things is being able to deal with all the personalities and all the stuff surrounding the Lakers. And he's definitely been around and experienced all the glitz and glamour and all the craziness that surrounds a team like the Lakers. He has a personality, or I think he could probably, get along with LeBron James, and they can figure out a good like hierarchy or working relationship or whatever. I think LeBron does and would respect him as a former player, a Hall of Famer, someone who has played this game at the highest level. And we'll see. That whole roster needs a lot of overhauling, and I'm not sure exactly what that'll look like. Because right now they have like the Island of Misfit Toys over there in LA. Though I did greatly enjoy watching the Lance Stephenson shaking Jeff Green to the ground, or not to the ground, but he stumbled. He made him dance, and watching the bench reaction there, that was quite fun. Lance Stephenson is one of the most fun players when he's doing just crazy Lance stuff. He's one of the most fun players, in my opinion, in the league to watch just be Lance. He's so unique and so fun, and I don't know if he is a piece of a good NBA team anymore, but he's super fun, and I hope he sticks around somewhere because I enjoyed those highlights. So that's a long way of saying I don't know that Jason Kidd will be the right fit in LA. I'm not surprised by the fact that he's linked to the Lakers.
A lot of Laker Freuda going on with the addition of LeBron. I love LeBron James. I think he's a great person, or has demonstrated great personality in addition to his game. But not that many people crying for what's happened to the Lakers this year. There's a video, one shining moment montage of Lakers sort of lowlights this year, a lot involving LeBron. And I couldn't breathe watching it. It was so funny. And I feel bad laughing because I think LeBron doesn't necessarily deserve all this, but in a way he does. So... oh man, that's a fascinating situation.
And for any listeners who are annoyed that we, like basically every other podcast in the world, have devolved into talking about the Lakers, I'm sorry, and you can direct your anger at Jason Kidd. It's his fault.
That's right. We are now just like everybody else, talking about the Lakers. What is wrong with us, Matt Velasquez? Not our best work. That's just the way it is. We have unfortunately overstayed our welcome, and we got to go.
Yeah, no, we're done. We cut us off. We're done.
The Bucks will be at home Thursday night at Pfizer Forum, taking on the Los Angeles Clippers. That's the new 4 seed in the West. That's an interesting team. So that'll be a tough battle. They hit the road for 3 games after that, visits to Atlanta, Brooklyn, Philadelphia, and then we are done pretty much. We've got 3 more home games after that. The last homestand of the series, it ends April 10th, and the NBA playoffs begin shortly after that. Thanks to Matt Velasquez, Journal Sentinel beat reporter for the Bucks, joining us on the show. Matt, we'll catch you again next week. We'll hopefully chat before that 76ers game on Thursday the 4th, because that'll be a compelling rematch between two teams that are going to be competing for the Eastern Conference gold. So hopefully we'll chat with you again soon.
All right, can't wait.
Find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify. Rate us, review us. Tell me how much you love me. Tell Matt Velasquez how much you love him. Find him on Twitter. Find me on Twitter. It's all very easy. And hopefully you've enjoyed what you've heard. We will catch you again very soon. Thanks for listening.